Okay, I'm gonna go ahead and read the thing. Come with me, dear listener, on a trip on the wings of imagination this week. Put yourself in the shoes of a French winemaker. You oversee massive vineyards, your product is renowned worldwide and is synonymous with French culture and fine dining. It's 1858. Other countries' vineyards are far behind your own in terms of quality and output, except for maybe you might grant the Italians some. And life is good. One day, you go outside to tour the vines. It's a beautiful, sunny day. The birds are singing, and the grapes are rotting. The vines are rotting away. Vines that were healthy last week are now so sickly that their vibrant greens are pale yellow or gray. With growing panic, you scan the rest of your massive vineyard. Your grapes are dying. Your wine is dying. Your industry is dying. From the late 1850s to the mid-1870s, French grapevines were under an assault that they had no defense against, a blight that devastated not just their wine, but their entire economy. On this episode of Relative Disasters, the Great French Wine Blight. Welcome to Relative Disasters, the show where I plant seeds in volcanic ash, harvest the tasty produce, and put that deliciousness into a podcast that I send out to my sister and anyone else who feels like listening. My much cooler big sister and I manage our existential dread by talking with each other about terrible and interesting historical events, their contexts, implications, and any related sidebars that tend to distract me. My name is Greg, my sister's name is Ella, and Ella, today we're going to be talking about blight and wine, two subjects I know are close to your heart. Sources for this episode include The Great French Wine Blight by Pat Montague, published in Wine Tidings in 1986, The Phylloxera in France, published in Scientific American in August of 1879, Seventh Annual Report of the State Board of Agriculture for the year 1871 for the state of Missouri, we'll see why later, and a number of retrospective articles. Now, before we start, I'm not a wine guy, so when this suggestion came in from listener Carrie, I wasn't super invested, and then I actually started looking into the research and the blight itself, and I've got to tell you, this stuff is fascinating. I love this, so thank you, Carrie. True blights are rare in modern agriculture. Most shortages and crop losses are due to capitalism farming systems, which are getting us into the territory of straight-up dystopia. Be careful what you grow in your own backyard. An agricultural megacorporation might actually own the copyright on those tomatoes. That's stuff out of cyberpunk fiction, but, you know, it's happening. Historically, blights and crop shortages were due to two factors, either a massive environmental change such as a supervolcanic eruption, an earthquake, or a massive flood, or due to an invasive insect that plants and indigenous predators just don't have a way to deal with. Okay, or in one very specific and horrific case, farmers starving to death because they weren't allowed to keep the crops they were growing when their subsistence crops was devastated by an introduced blight, and the absentee landlords that owned their homes and farms put in place a system of suppression and repression, causing something less like a blight and more like an attempt at genocide. And you know what? Deep breath. We're here to talk about French wine. Okay. So in southern France in 1863, winemakers noticed that their vines were withering and dying. Their hardy varieties were helplessly wasting away, and their immediate thought was that the symptoms reminded them of nothing more than tuberculosis. From there, the strange disease spread throughout France, leaping from vine to vine and variety to variety, with a few vineyards dodged completely, but many completely destroyed. All told, by the mid-1870s, over 40% of the famous French vineyards were laid waste. The infection began slowly and usually in the center of the vineyard. A vine's leaves would yellow and then go to a deep red and drop off. The grapes that grew from that plant would be inedible and certainly not useful for winemaking. They would be too acidic, too watery, no bouquet. And then the vine would wither as if an invisible person were drinking its innards with a straw. The roots would blacken, and then it would spread to its neighbors. Attempts to unearth and destroy the infected plants met with no success. Winemakers would dig up a dying plant and get rid of it, only to find the infection spreading anyway. One winemaker notably cordoned off a massive portion of his vineyard and burned it down to contain the blight. The next year, it simply returned. France was in an uproar. First of all, to put it mildly, the mid to late 1800s were a tumultuous time for France anyway, what with all the, you know, wars, and this blight was destroying not just the wine industry, but a huge part of the French national character. Something had to be done. The Agricultural Society of Montpellier started a committee. They appointed botanists, wine growers, vineyard managers, and blight specialists. By getting everybody together to share information, they hit on a common theme almost immediately. The dead roots yielded no answers, but roots in the active process of dying were found to have hundreds or thousands of tiny insects infesting them. Dear listeners, our friend the aphid is back. Okay, it's actually Phylloxera, which is related to the aphid, so it's not really the aphid, but it's close enough for me. The grape Phylloxera is tiny, almost microscopic, and just like their aphid cousins, they are sapsuckers. Phylloxera have a devastating feeding adaptation. They pierce into a root with their sharp proboscis and inject a venom into the plant. As they drink up the sap from the root, the venom eats away at the internal structures of the vine, preventing the vine from healing itself while the Phylloxera is drinking, and causing the internal pressure of the sap to fall, which allows the Phylloxera to continue feeding underground without interruption until the plant is dead. They then withdraw their proboscis and move on to their next victim. Now, Phylloxera are native to North America, where they have been in an arms race with American vine varieties for as long as they've both been around. North American vines have evolved to have defenses against the Phylloxera, either by having thicker and heavier root systems that can survive the bug's venom, or in the case of a few, actively fight back with an adaptation to their sap that makes it extremely viscous and can choke the Phylloxera to death if it tries to drink it. Very cool stuff. In North America, the Phylloxera have had to change their feeding habits, focusing instead on the leaves of the plants, where they make these gross structures called galls to house and protect their young. Think of them like a leaf tumor or a leaf wart, only they're filled with Phylloxera eggs, and then they hatch into nymphs and eat their way out and harm the leaf system, but not to the point of killing off the entire plant. So, as we've explored before on this show, what happens when you take a predatory species that's been evolving forever to deal with a plant that has defenses against it and transport it to a place with no natural defenses? I mean, you know what happens. It's a slaughter. So the advent of the steamship made the cross-ocean journey survivable for the Phylloxera, and they came over, likely on transported North American rootstock in the days before governmental regulations and invasive species protections. Once in France, the Phylloxera were in sap-sucking heaven. Interestingly enough, the French had run into the Phylloxera before, they just didn't know it. Early French colonies in what would become Florida had tried to grow French grapevines, and the native Phylloxera had attacked and destroyed them all, leaving the French to decide that their pure European wine grapes simply couldn't grow in the coarse, unfit soil of North America. Fun fact, they were growing just fine out in California. So the Montpellier Agricultural Society had sussed out the cause, the Phylloxera, but what could they do about it? Well, right away, the French wine community split. Some declared that they had to combat the Phylloxera, while the majority stated that the insect wasn't the cause of the problem, it was just another symptom, and the true cause of the blight was still out there. Now, they had some reasons for this. Phylloxera in their native North America only attacked leaves, not roots. More importantly, the only method of stopping the Phylloxera was extremely controversial. It was grafting the root system of North American vines to French stocks. The conservative majority claimed that grafting would result in the death of the wine industry and would pollute the French stock with inferior stock. Proponents of the idea argued that all of the vineyards dying would be the death of the wine industry, and that grafting hardier rootstock to their vines would allow them to survive without compromising the characteristics of the French wine grape. Now, a quick sidebar here, because grafting is an amazingly cool process. It is the literal joining of plant tissues from two different but related plants. Essentially, and I'm simplifying here, you take the above-ground portion of one plant and duct tape it to the roots of another plant. As long as you can keep their vascular tissue joined together, the plant will heal and grow, fusing together. They do this a lot in fruit trees, and they do this a lot in grapevines. It's kind of amazing, and this practice has been around since at least 500 BCE, and maybe as far back as 1400 BCE. So while it struck French winemaking purists as controversial, it was a well-established horticultural practice, tried and true, and had even been done in the winemaking industry numerous times. So, to graft or not to graft? That became the question. Well, in the end, the winemakers who chose to graft won, by default, by being the ones that survived. Vineyards that refused to graft tried everything. Pesticides, seeding the soil with carbon bisulfide, trying to introduce predators for the phylloxera, such as birds and toads, and no matter what they tried, their vines continued to die. Meanwhile, the farmers that bit the bullet and started the time-consuming and expensive process of grafting their vines onto North American woodstock saw their vineyards recover. By the 1880s, the entire French wine industry was on its way to recovery. Now, in order to make this recovery more palatable, they developed a euphemism. This was not grafting. This was reconstituting. Phylloxera are still around in huge numbers, and they've proven to be a problem. There are no real control methods or cures for them. Once you've got them, you've got them, and your plants need to be hardy enough to survive them. Interesting side note, there is one native European grapevine that is resistant to phylloxera. It is a variety that grows on the volcanic island of Santorini in Greece. Whether the vine itself or the volcanic soil is what makes it resistant is still a question being debated, but that is a pretty cool thing. And so the French wine industry recovered and restored itself to the glory that it was and continues to be today. And that's it. That's the story of the great French wine blight of the mid to late 1800s, yet another battleground in the never-ending war between plants and the insects that predate on them. Here at Relative Disasters, we make sure to fact-check our work to bring you the most accurate disasters possible. If you'd like to know more about our sources, they're cited at the beginning of the episode. Sometimes we do make mistakes, of course, so if you have any thoughts to share or corrections we need to know, please write to us at relative.disasters@gmail.com. We cannot respond to emails, but we do read each one. Or if you'd like to shame us publicly, and we know you do, why not try our Instagram at relative.disasters. A big shout out to some public shaming from a Swedish friend of ours. I need to work on my Swedish. Yes, I definitely do. My mispronunciations are atrocious. A big thank you to our patrons who support us on Patreon. You guys are great and help us justify keeping this podcast ad-free. We'd like to thank our major disasters, Katie and Georgia, for their support. And this week's episode was brought to you by Andrea, who loves a good insect-resistant wine, and Lauren, who would love to have a venomous proboscis of her own. Thank you so much for joining us for this episode. I hope you've enjoyed the story, and I hope you'll join us again next week. Ella, you know that I love a good ghost ship story, and I know that you love a good airship story. What if I told you there was a ghost airship? On the next episode of Relative Disasters, we're going to fly out and find the L8 American. Have a good week, and I'll see you then.